Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoppen. This is part two of this week's Q&A with Layla. Reminder, if you want to send us a question, send it to radioprogram, one word, at AOL.com. And if the question is appropriate, we will endeavor to do our best to answer it as part of our weekly Q&A with Layla. So, Layla, what's our next question?
Okay, this next question comes from Ted. He's a 74-year-old male. He says, my doctor detected a murmur during my annual physical. Further tests, ultrasound showed some calcium buildup that prevented a valve from functioning normally. Nuclear treadmill test of 7 minutes. His pulse was 155. All right.
A lot of data. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now he's a former construction worker, a marathoner, an ice hockey player. He's always been physically active, a regular listener to your radio program. I would appreciate any advice you can suggest. What do I do about this?
Okay. I mean, it sounds like what he's saying is, how could this possibly befall me? Because
right.
I listen to your radio program. I follow your advice. I'm athletic.
I'm an extraordinary 74-year-old man.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so here's the deal. You get calcification as you age. And it actually is, it's almost a universal phenomenon to see calcium deposits, especially on the aortic valve. And the reason for that is, I mean, to some extent, it's, you know, I guess, dietary factors.
Dr. Hoffman,
yeah.
Did that happen to Jack LaLanne? Isn't that why he died?
No, I think
you may be
correct, and you know that. And here's an example of the most athletic guy in the world, and
yeah.
what that suggests is that either athleticism doesn't protect you from all misfortune. By the way, he was at a very advanced age, and he was in excellent physical condition, so he had a very nice life.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't live to 150. Okay, well, it's kind of like our normal allocation. We're programmed to eventually turn that corner. But there's a possibility that poor diet can cause blockage in all the arteries, and then there's even more deposits around the aorta. But it's possible to have a calcified aorta and have clean coronary arteries and have clean carotid arteries, not get a stroke, not get a heart attack, but have a little bit of a problem with the valve later.
Mm-hmm.
However, from what I'm hearing, there's more to that question, but I reviewed it earlier. The doctor's basically going to watch it and not do anything, and this guy's life is not compromised. There may come a point where, if he lives long enough, the valve really won't close properly. That'll put some back pressure on the heart. The heart will have to work harder, at which point they do valve surgery. They actually will either
replace the valve.
They'll either replace the valve or they do something called a commissurotomy, which is to kind of open up the valve, fix it without taking it out and replacing it.
Okay.
So, you could put in a pig valve. Literally, it's derived from pig tissue, or you can put in a ball valve, or you can do a commissurotomy, which is just like repairing the valve. And they can actually thread now a catheter up your groin and do it without cracking open your chest. They can do it
like an angiogram.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Like, minimally invasive surgery. So this is something where the cardiologist is probably going to ask for echocardiograms over time,
mm-hmm.
and to see if the heart continues to function normally. And this guy's heart might wear out, long after he dies of natural causes at 102. It doesn't necessarily mean he's going to have surgery. It's just something to keep an eye on, and maybe just an incidental finding. If we check everybody for calcium of their aortic valves and do a big fancy-schmancy workup, we're going to find that the majority of people over the age of 70 or 75 have calcification, the vast majority. I think it's going to be really unusual exception to find somebody with a completely clean aortic valve after, 8 decades of life.
Right.
And by the way, is there a treatment? Simply ask, can chelation therapy fix this? I don't think chelation therapy can pull that calcium out. It might be good for the overall body, but it's not going to make it go away. And, you know, he should do all the things that people do to help support their circulation. You know, take resveratrol and fish oil, adequate vitamin D, perhaps MK7, which actually does do something to prevent calcification. And, you know, the whole retinue of things that protect the heart.
And maintain your physical activity.
And maintain your physical activity. However, be attuned to signs of, you know, if what happens sometimes is the valves stop working, is that you may experience much increased shortness of breath with exertion, and then that's the time to get a checkup from the doctor to make sure that the valve is working properly. And sometimes that's a signal that you need to get the surgery.
Okay. Best of luck, Ted.
Yes, indeed.
All right. We have another question. I know we talked about UTI in the past, but this is actually interesting too. Okay. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I enjoy your podcast very much. Very informative. Keep up with the great service. This is from Aliza. What would you recommend for fighting UTIs? I've been on 3 rounds of antibiotics, but the UTI is back. Now, she did some research, apparently, and there were suggestions for biofilm disruptors.
Right.
And what do you think of this, Dr. Hoffman?
Well,
and what kind of biofilm? I mean, she mentions names here that I can mention.
Go ahead, mention them.
Like Interphase Plus, Biofilm Defense,
right.
Lauricidin.
Lauricidin, which is actually the derivative of coconut.
Oh, okay.
Right?
All right.
It's.
Okay. So, biofilm disruptors, because we know that that's interesting, because I tend to think, and you'll tell me otherwise, that for urinary tract infection, it's because bacteria is sticking to the walls of the bladder.
Exactly.
And things like mannose or even cranberry, but especially right. things like D-mannose can keep it from sticking.
Exactly.
But the biofilm, I wonder if they're already strapped in their biofilms, this bacteria,
right.
then this might be another avenue?
I think that this is a very interesting area. However, you know, actually today we just had 2 such cases, women who, actually in one case a guy and another case a woman who have susceptibility to urinary tract infections, and we gave them both D-mannose, which is a sugar, and what the sugar does is it actually binds to receptors on the wall of the bladder that are receptors for the E. coli bacteria. The E. coli wants to, you know, otherwise, the E. coli bacteria is just going to pass by harmlessly unless it grabs onto the wall and holds on like a barnacle. And then when it starts to hold on like a barnacle, it forms a colony, and that's what causes urinary tract infections. So if we block the adhesion of the E. coli to the wall, and by the way, this is the basis of a lot of new research on bladder infections and infections in other parts of the body, is if we can block adhesion of bacteria to the skin surfaces or to the internal surfaces, then we will be more able to eradicate them. Because once you form a biofilm is like a protected colony of bacteria. It's like a little mini city, and it's covered with mucus and sometimes other substances. A way to think of a biofilm is those of you who have a swimming pool, and sometimes, you know, even the swimming pool's got chlorine. Sometimes you run your finger along the side of the swimming pool, and it's like, oh, there's algae on the wall of the swimming pool. What that is, that's a biofilm. And the biofilm actually protects the algae from the effects of the chlorine, which normally would kill the algae.
That's an example.
Yeah, and the biofilms typically occur in the mucous membranes. They can occur in the urinary tract, in the vagina. They can occur especially in the nasal passages, in the throat, in the lungs, and in the intestinal tract. And one of the best breakers of the biofilm is another type of sugar. You know, we use D-mannose, a half teaspoon 3 or 4 times a day. Sometimes we add a little natural sugarless cranberry juice or cranberry concentrate. Actually, I prefer the concentrate to the juice. And then that doesn't work that well in nasal passages. This is another sugar, which is similar. It's, you know, D-mannose, and then there's xylitol, which works in the nasal passage. That's our XLEAR, clear. Exhaler or clear nasal spray, which is fantastic. I mean, it's revolutionized our approach to patients who have chronic sinus infections, asthma. That is a breaker of biofilms. Now, these products that she's talking about, Interphase and things like that, I've been looking at them for a while, and I haven't quite signed on to them.
Okay.
I think that they are promising and interesting. By the way, it's also thought that Lyme disease protects itself with biofilms, so that it's sometimes hard to treat with antibiotics.
That's why the doxy doesn't work after a while or
something. Yeah, it's very hard to kill with antibiotics. But, you know, I think this is one of those things which is we need more research and more real clear-cut evidence that these things work and make a difference. So, for example, people try to get rid of the yeast in their intestinal tract. They can't get rid of the yeast. The thought is, oh, maybe there's a biofilm that's protecting the yeast, so let's take Interphase or let's take one of these things that will break down the biofilm. I got to say that some of the science is there on that, but I think it's not quite past the threshold of that it's well acknowledged.
Okay.
But biofilms are really where it's at in research. The other place that biofilms occur is around joint replacements. And that's devastating because you can have biofilm that... That forms around a joint replacement. And then you get some sort of terrible internal infection. And it's very hard to treat that. So this is a real concern in medicine. A lot of research is being done on biofilms. But, you know, we don't have all the answers. But we have some natural things that... inhibit the biofilms.
Okay. All right. Best of luck, Aliza.
Yep.
All right. So we have a question from David with prostate cancer. He says he has a Gleason score 3+4, stage T2.
Okay.
Scheduled for robotic surgery.
Okay, so just let's stop right there. So what is that, you know, Gleason 3+4?
Yeah.
That adds up to a Gleason 7. Usually... we can condone what's called watchful waiting, or better yet, active surveillance and active holistic surveillance. This is actually a term coined by Dr. Aaron Katz, our integrative urologist, where not only do you just wait, but you also load up patients with nutraceuticals and you change their diet and you get them to exercise. And those cancers can then be stopped dead in their tracks, even if we don't remove them or irradiate them. But that you can do with a Gleason 6 or lower. Generally, a Gleason 7 suggests more aggressive cancer that is going to be hard to leave alone, especially in a younger man where, you know, they don't have other complicated medical conditions and where it's more likely that the cancer could grow and compromise their longevity. So how old is this guy?
He doesn't say.
Oh, okay.
But he's interested in intravenous vitamin C.
Yeah.
And what do you think about that for this stage? And he's scheduled for robotic surgery.
I think it's a great idea. There's lots of evidence now that not oral vitamin C, but intravenous vitamin C, which can achieve very, very high concentrations in the bloodstream, hunt down and kill or at least inhibit cancer cells. And we actually have patients who are receiving intravenous vitamin C over long periods of time with advanced metastatic cancers, and it's really keeping their cancer at bay.
Yeah.
So this would be a case where it's probably the cancer will be eradicated with conventional treatment, but there is a small chance the cancer could come back. So in patients who've had breast cancer, prostate cancer, quote, so-called successfully treated, we urge intravenous vitamin C. And that's something that complementary physicians like myself know how to administer. Conventional physicians are not interested in administering it, but the research is being done primarily at Kansas University Medical College under the direction of Dr. Jeannie Driscoe, who's been a guest on our podcast. She's a good colleague of mine, so you can look her up. If you go on to our website, just plug in, I think you'll be able to find it, Driscoe, D-R-I-S-K-O, and you'll find the podcast was done a few months ago, or you can scroll through our podcast and find it, Intravenous Vitamin C for Cancer. And she's doing the research, and the research looks good. They've extended the lives of patients with ovarian cancer, which is very dangerous, and from, I think it was like average of like 14 or 15 months to 22 months with intravenous vitamin C. And that, by the way, I'm not saying that intravenous vitamin C inevitably produces a cure, but a significant prolongation of survival and increasing the chance that you will achieve a remission.
Yeah. Best of luck to David.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I think he's going to be fine with conventional treatment, but this is a really important case for, you don't just stop after conventional treatment. It's not either or. You get all the type of aftercare with the right kind of diet, exercise program makes a difference, and you take the right nutrients to prevent the recurrence of cancer.
Yeah. Let's see, PhytoGuard, Broccomax.
EGCG, Kyolic, D, omega-3 fish oil, and Empower. These are among the things that we might use.
Yeah. Okay. Best of luck to David. Let's see here. We have a question from Carol.
Yep.
We have chlorinated town water. So for drinking, we filter it with a carbon filter to take out the chlorine. Well, most town water has chlorine in it, as far as I know. Are we depriving ourselves of the other beneficial minerals by doing this? Do we need to take additional minerals that may be removed by the filter? Huh.
Well,
that's a great question, but I don't think so.
Yeah, what would you say on that?
No, I don't think that the carbon filter is necessarily removing minerals that way. There isn't going to be that much mineral unless you're drinking primarily mineral water or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the regular carbon filtration systems, your Pure, your Brita, all of that kind of stuff, I don't think is removing. The way that minerals are really removed is in distilled water.
Yeah.
And distilled water is a problem.
You know,
because it's distilled, all of those are removed, and then by drinking it, it's kind of sucking it out of your own body to a degree.
You know, I once saw a study that showed that in parts of the country where the water is very soft naturally,
mm-hmm.
That isn't necessarily that people use water softeners to make the water soft.
Yeah.
Because they want to get rid of the minerals that cause the scaliness and mess up
and the lime.
Pipes and
yeah.
the lime, you know, the lime and whatever. So in parts of the country where the water is naturally soft, there's a higher incidence of heart disease. Now, that correlation is not necessarily causation, because a lot of those places where there's softer water are in the South, where people eat a lot of junk and are more obese. So I'm not saying that that's always the case, but a case could be made if you're on a really terrible diet and you're eating junk food all the time, and maybe you are getting significant amounts of your minerals from water, you know, that's hard, that is mineral rich, but you know, even if some of the minerals are taken out by your carbon filter, you should, if you're eating a good diet, and particularly if you're taking a multivitamin mineral supplement, you should easily overcome that deficit.
That's
you know?
True. Interesting what you said about the softer water and higher rates of heart disease. My knowledge of soft water is in urban areas and hard water being in rural areas.
Right.
Our air pollution alone, I mean, there's another association there. Hard water, I've always found in upstate New York or wherever, the more rural areas where they're typically using water softeners and things like that. So that's interesting, though. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, whatever. For what it's worth, I don't think that that's – my water from the tap goes through a carbon block filter.
Mm-hmm.
And I
mm-hmm.
try to get out some of the extra stuff. By the way, I think New York City water is pretty good, but I don't like the idea that they add fluoride and chlorine.
Exactly.
So I refilter it, and
yeah.
It's kind of a pain because the water runs really fast from the regular tap,
and flows down through the filter.
Right. Right. So I have to stand there patiently to fill up my water pot when I make some vegetables. But I'd rather do that
yeah.
in cleaner water.
Well, you know, we shouldn't have fluoridated water. Fluoride competes with iodine for thyroid and all of that kind of thing. And too much fluoride can also brittle our bones. There might be some association there with osteoporosis. What
Indeed.
Do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that there's, look, this fluoridation thing is one of the craziest things. Why it got started on such a mass level, I really suspect that the fix was on because fluoride is a byproduct of the aluminum industry, and they have all this industrial waste that they would have to
yeah.
dispose of at great cost. And instead, they found a way to say, hey, let's take this fluoride and we'll sell it to municipalities. The government will buy it from us and we'll put it in the drinking water because it's so good. Well, that was just the theory about dental cavities, and the ADA,
yeah.
the Dental Association, signed onto it. But, you know, why add this potentially toxic chemical to everybody's water supply so that involuntarily everybody gets it? You know, I just don't – maybe we could put some Prozac in the water. We could put some Lipitor in the water.
I think that's already happening. There are already drugs in the water.
No, you're right. Every time we flush our drugs down the toilet, some fish gets stoned, you know, or
you
some
know,
maybe
I think
some
a
fish
lot of people- – A lot of people don't know that the way to properly dispose of their drugs is to bring it back to the pharmacy.
It's hazardous waste. It is really hazardous waste.
Like, you don't throw your batteries in the garbage. You bring it back to Radio Shack.
I know.
You put it in their used battery pile.
Exactly.
Or your motor oil from your car, you bring it back to AutoZone, and that's where you bring it.
Right.
Yeah.
Or else,
anyway.
You know, you might run into a three-eyed shark on Viagra or something like that. You know, you don't want to create environmental devastation. Who thinks that you're a female shark? You know, watch out. They actually measure levels of these drugs in streams and estuaries, and they find that you can actually detect levels of antidepressants and all manner of drugs in the water there. That's not a good thing.
That's
not good for the wildlife, and ultimately we probably reabsorb the antibiotic residues. That's terrible because it kills our beneficial flora.
That's true.
This
and all the herbicides, the fungicides, the pesticides on farmland already going into the groundwater, into the aquifer as well. Add insult to injury there.
So in part one of this podcast, people go back to part one, you asked in the beginning of the podcast, you said, we seem to be seeing so many psychiatric problems among people. What's going on?
Here's our conclusion.
right, exactly. So, you know, there's so much going on. All right, so you know this argues for detoxification. That's a subject for another day. By the way, both of us, this was not planned, but both of us this week, I did a podcast on the subject of weight loss supplements, and you wrote an article on things to reduce cravings and take the edge off appetite. Correct?
Yeah.
So this was not planned.
Metabolism, yeah.
This is a big week for dieters. So you can read the article. That's going to be posted this week at drhoffman.com by Layla. What's the title of the article again?
It's just for my favorite supplements for metabolic efficiency.
Okay, good.
And, you know, for any weight loss goals and things like that.
Good. And then mine was I evaluated nutritional supplements that purport to help weight loss, a la, you know, kind of a critical review, talking about including some of the things that have been so highly touted on Dr. Oz, you know, the green coffee bean extract and the Garcinia Cambogia, raspberry ketones, those kind of CLA, you know, we talk about those. And then my favorites, you know, I do like EGCG, I do like Capsiate. But I have to say that all in all, those have a modest effect. They are not going to, you know, you're not going to sit on the couch and eat Doritos, and
exactly.
The pounds aren't going to melt.
There are no magic bullets.
Right.
It's part of a program. It's absolutely, but it's part of a good program for weight loss. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Good. Okay. So next week we'll reconvene. We've got more questions. We invite you to send them to radioprogram@AOL.com. We thank you for listening, and until next week. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman and Layla. Say hi, Layla.
Hi.
And
take care, everybody.
Have a great week. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.